Welcome to Tea, the Entrepreneurial Artist podcast with me, Tanya Ingerson. Well, I'm very excited to be able to share with you all an interview that I did with David Innocenti. Now, many of you may know that David Innocenti is a designer and maker of Innocenti boxes, and he's also my husband. It was a really fun interview, kind of funny because we're husband and wife, but really interesting how we were able to have this really great interview where we actually forgot we were husband and wife. David talks a lot about how he's able to communicate with customers around the world and how he's been able to build this business of selling internationally, the process of sending by freight and the complexities with that, a lot around the SEO, how to capture people's attention and the process of selling his boxes. Not only because he's my husband, but he has a really interesting background of how he actually got to this point of making the Innocenti boxes. And I really hope that you enjoy the interview that I had with David Innocenti as much as I enjoyed having it. Well, here I am in David's workshop, which is his home workshop. Hi, David.
Hello. How are you going?
Good. Even though we work together and we work on the business of Innocenti boxes together, and I do more of the marketing photography and we work on the business together, but the actual making of the Innocenti boxes is really your domain, and really I don't come out into your workshop very often, so this is actually quite an interesting place for me to come.
Oh, every so often you're out here giving me a little snack.
Advice.
A spawn or something. Yeah, advice, yeah, or a chat.
So for our listeners, David, today, explain a little bit, what is the art that you actually do?
Well, I make functional art boxes, and by that I mean they are designer wood and metal boxes, so powder-coated metal mainly and rare woods that are functional in that they are used for something, to store things generally, and a lot of watches, a lot of watch collectors lately. But, yeah, essentially you could, if you had to sum it up in a short sentence or a statement, to be functional art.
Yeah, I would say that too. And where did you get the skills? Because you work with metal and you work with timber, which we've discovered is quite an unusual skill mix. So where did you get the skills to do the metal and the wood?
Well, the metal's part of its... I'm a qualified mechanic, or I was in a previous life, so I worked a little bit with metal in that way, but the metal of the boxes is quite a simple concept. It's sheet metal, basic black sheet metal, that is folded and rolled or hand-formed in really simple ways. The design is quite simple, but it's just they're quite unusual in that they're a combination of wood and metal, whereas most boxes are made either all metal or all wood, and they look kind of traditional, whereas mine look modern. So it's a mixture of the two, but the blending of the two is quite simple. They're attached to each other, the metal and the wood, with screws, so it's quite a industrial look. In terms of the skills, yeah, some of it came from being a mechanic, because you learn to work with your hands. I mean, I learn, and I've always learnt quite simply from just watching and listening. So the wood part of it is something I think I've always wanted to do. As a kid, I wanted to be a wood sculptor. I don't know where that came from. Probably from the fact that Dad was always looking at books and had lots of books about the Italian Renaissance with sculpture. And, of course, that was done in marble, but I liked the idea of working with wood. And then at 15 at high school, I made an electric guitar. And so I got the idea of working with wood then. And this idea cropped up, to do the boxes cropped up later in life.
So did you actually use that guitar when you, because you're a, you were a jazz musician, well, you still are a jazz musician, do less gigs these days, but did you use that guitar you made in any of your gigs?
Yeah, I did. I used that guitar at university when I studied there and for gigs, and yeah, I used it all the time.
Oh, and also, I know that you also built a classic car or a kit car, a Cobra. How old were you when you built that?
Mid-20s.
Yeah.
I bought a kit from of an AC Cobra from WA. It's essentially a chassis and body. And having the skills of a mechanic, and I was a mechanic at the time, you use the skills that you have as a mechanic to kind of build the car from that basic framework.
Yeah.
So I had to learn a few things that you wouldn't do as a mechanic, like how to roll brake lines and stuff like that. But generally, it's all mechanical work.
Right.
And you just follow instruction. The guy who sold me the kit kind of helped me out a lot. But essentially, that was a chassis and a body, a fiberglass body. And over maybe 2.5 years, I think, I put it together.
So some of the some comments, and when you look at the Innocenti box range, there definitely is, particularly with the powder coating of the metal and design and shapes of classic cars and that era. And I know from your Italian background, there's a very strong passion for Ferrari and Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Or do you get some of that inspiration from some of those designs?
I did. I think, I'm not sure it was a conscious idea, but I think it does come. In the back of your mind, there is that idea, because as a kid, I always drew cars, and it was one of my things I did as a youngster, was do a lot of drawing of cars. So the boxes kind of have a... There is a connection there.
Mm.
There is a connection of the way that the metal looks, which is painted metal, which is what cars are.
Mm.
So, yeah, you can say, you could say that there is a mixture of the new and old, the wood being the old and the metal being the new of the boxes, which makes them modern but classic in a way. And there is a connection to cars and the whole automotive design with shape and geometry and that sort of stuff.
And what about the timber itself? You know, because the design of the Innocenti box from when it first started, and do you remember what year you actually made that first Innocenti box?
I think it was 2006. We were renovating a house, and I had some wood left over from the surround of a fireplace we were building, some pine, and you said you wanted a jewellery box.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd build one for you, and I kind of made an all-wood one. And I really liked that. It's the first time I'd worked in wood since I made the guitar when I was a kid. So I decided, I somehow got the idea. I had a metal pipe left over from a job we were doing at the house, a tube. And I don't know where the idea came from, but I cut it in half lengthways and stuck some wood on all four ends, put some hinges on it, some legs. Had a friend who was a panel beater paint it, and it kind of looked unusual.
Yeah.
And it was rough, but it was unusual. And I thought, and I think I showed it to you and...
Loved it.
And you said, do some more. So I did, and I refined the ideas and refined the design and finally came up with what looked a whole lot better than the first one. And that's where it came from. Where the idea came from, I have no idea. You just don't know where those things come from. They just come to you. And I've always tinkered and played and experimented and with materials and things come to you, and you just... I've never been afraid to have a crack at doing them. So
I've noticed that from that very first box, which I was felt very privileged and grateful for you making that jewellery box for me, which is very unique and we still have it. Is that there's more timber. Like those first Innocenti boxes were a lot of metal and screws, and now it almost looks a bit more like there's a bit more of a celebration of the different timbers. Would you say that?
I try to, because the look of the boxes is very much dominated by the metal, so the wood I wanted to feature just as much. So I try and make the wood match with top and bottom of the box as much as I can, and make it feature as much with internal features as well with wood. So I try and make as much wood as possible, decorate the lid with wood, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people love wood, but why they like my work, I think, is because it's a mixture of the two.
And those beautiful bright colours that you use with the timbers, like what timber would be your favourite? I mean, it's a bit hard, isn't it, to know which one's your actual favourite?
I like Huon pine
a
lot because it's really, really easy to work with. It does everything well. It drills easily, sands easily, files well, smells beautiful, looks great, changes over time. It's really, it's rare, so it's sort of valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a favourite. I really like, I've got some new stuff lately called white ash, which is really amazing, really beautiful. I like juniper. I like the walnut that I've used in the past. So there's a few that I really like, a few not. A few are nice to work with and look great, but they're a little tricky to work with.
Yeah.
But they're the favourite ones.
So one of the things about your boxes is that, you know, and having obviously been involved in the business, is there is an amazing sound when your boxes close that is so incredibly crisp. Is that a technique that you've been working on? Is it just...
It just happens.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that happens that you get to, when you finish it, it's got this clunk that just sounds finished.
Yes, yeah. So the timber, the work that you've done with the wood, is it just a development of knowledge as you've gone along, so self-taught?
More or less, yeah. Mm. In terms of the woods, a lot of people ask me about different woods and I don't know a whole lot. I just know what it's like to work with the ones I've got.
Mm.
I get my woods a lot from a friend of ours, Jeff Bromelow, who put me onto Huon pine because the first lot were made with just Australian Tassie oak from Bunnings.
Yeah.
So now I use those type of wood. He puts me onto lots of wood. He introduces me to lots of new woods all the time because he's an arborist as well as a sculptor, and he just says, try this, and I go and try that, and I like it or don't like it. And so the idea with the wood is always to try something new, but to try and stick with the ones I've got so I don't get too... too much wood laying around the place.
Yeah. So as far as the business goes, do you remember the very first Innocenti box sale?
Yeah, I do. I remember the first couple specifically. The first one was to an actual friend who was a musician who was buying a jewellery box for his wife.
Yeah.
Claudio. And he came to our house and he found out somehow that I was doing these things. He liked the look of it and come around and bought one. But then we went to markets, you and I. We went to, the first one was the Festival Theatre Markets.
Yeah.
And I had a little red one that was a diamond-shaped box. From the side it was diamond-shaped.
Yeah.
And a guy and his friend, this guy in a wheelchair. Mm. That's why it sticks out in my mind. He was in a wheelchair. And he came back and forth between my stall, our stall and other stalls, and he kept coming back and back, and finally he bought it. And so I remember... selling that first, it was red.
Yeah.
And
wasn't it for his daughter for a special birthday?
I think it was a gift, yeah, for someone he knew.
Yeah.
But I remember that specifically because he was a nice fella and it just stuck in my mind that the first actual market sale we made was to that gentleman in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Yeah. So what were you actually doing for a career? What were you doing to earn money at that point?
I was a musician, so I was playing in bands around Adelaide, in my own bands around Adelaide, doing pickup work, like people would hire me to play as a player in their band.
Mm.
I was teaching music, teaching guitar at TAFE, I think, at the time, not at university just yet. I got that later. Mm. Between teaching and playing, that's what I was doing. And then the boxes became a part-time, I suppose, then. And then we expanded it and it's become what it is now, which is...
So now, like from 2006 to now 2020, this is the income for both of us.
Yes. It's pretty much all I do. There's still a bit of gig work here and there, still play.
Mm.
I don't teach anymore.
Yeah.
So this is it.
Yeah.
This is my living.
Yes. So
I'm just going to wander over here.
He's actually, David is actually working in his workshop, which is fantastic. I love doing these interviews when people are actually doing their artwork. So he's actually creating a box right now, which is...
If something goes wrong and I swear, don't mind.
He generally swears in Italian, so that's okay. So where do you actually sell the boxes? Like, what's the ways that you sell them?
Well, initially, we sold them at markets. And we got approached at a market, that first market, by Tarts Collective, Tarts Textile and Arts Collective in Adelaide. So that gave us the idea to go to galleries, and we went all over Adelaide, and we went to Sydney, Melbourne, and found galleries that would put our work on consignment. So we did that for the first few years, and then, well, probably until 2014. And then we opened our own gallery through Renew Adelaide in Rundle Place. Gallery. So we sold directly to customers. So as well as doing consignment, we did, with other galleries, we sold directly to the public for 3 years. We were there exactly 3 years till 2017. But while I was there, I also started a website and an Etsy site.
Mm.
And that's become, the online presence now has become the biggest seller. That's where I sell most of my work now. Still have the galleries, only two. Well, there's only one consignment now. That's Tarts, Textile and Arts Collective. And the rest are wholesalers. I've got a wholesaler in Canberra, a wholesaler in Queensland.
Yes.
And online is now by far our biggest platform where we sell.
So we do have, you know, regular business meetings, and I know that's probably driven a lot by me having the business background, but when I looked at our whiteboard this morning of where boxes are currently going to, is that we have, you know, just to give our listeners a view, an idea, is that you're working on boxes to go to Phoenix in the US, Finland, Washington, Queensland, the Netherlands, Florida. This is just the work now. And the boxes are selling to customers around the world, and you're getting inquiries regularly with conversations through the online with people around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So how does that happen, do you think? What's the key to, because a lot of people open online stores that you don't have that same international success, I suppose, that we're getting.
Well, Etsy has its own... Etsy is the biggest seller for us, and it's certainly got its own audience, but we generate our own traffic through your marketing, which is essentially through social media.
Yeah.
So that pushes people and makes us visible to people, which then sends them to our website or to Etsy, or even directly to me through email if they happen to. We've had that before, through things like Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah.
And so that's how that our presence online really increased over time, is through those three things, I think.
Yeah.
Through Etsy, through the trying to do as much, and I've learned a little bit about SEO of websites, a search engine optimization of website design or website maximization, is that the word?
Mm.
To get people to the website, but mostly we do it by driving the traffic ourselves.
Yeah. And there's a lot of background work that you do on... And in fact, you are incredible with the SEO, like the work that you do with, you know, tagging and the words. There's a lot of work that goes on to particularly our own online store, isn't
it? It's quite complex. It's quite... Yeah. And I don't know the half of it. I just sort of tinker a little bit with it here and there.
Yeah.
I try and learn as in between working...
Yeah.
And the work itself and design and all that sort of thing, and getting in learning how to do better and better tagging and titles and web page and refreshing, putting new photos.
Yeah.
I suppose the one thing that helps with website is to keep changing things because my basic understanding of algorithms with things like search engines like Google is that it recognises activity. And if you're active with changing this, that and the other, you can't just leave it for a week or 2 weeks and expect traffic to come. You've got to change images, put new images, change the titles, change the tags, tinker with this, tinker with that. That Google recognises that this is a serious site, and these are the things. If people keep going to it more and more, it'll keep sending you more and more traffic. You'll go up the rankings of Google search engine.
Yeah.
And the higher up you're seen, in other words, page 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Because people don't go beyond that, I don't think.
No.
That's how you generate more and more traffic.
And also the bespoke, the handmade, the custom designed box, the Innocenti box that has become more and more the predominant product that we sell, I suppose, through the business, is what's the process that happens through that? Because I think that's a really important process of the success of being able to sell internationally. So how does that actually work, David?
Well, people get in touch with me, I suppose. Through Etsy, they have a conversation system that essentially they see the work, if they find the work through Etsy, and then they contact me and say, some people just buy direct, but a lot of people want a different colour. They see a box, they like it, but they want a different colour, or they want a different wood, or they want it bigger or smaller or whatever.
Yeah.
And they start a conversation, essentially an email with me, and I just kind of walk them through what they want. Mm. And if it's possible, then we end up coming up with a design they like, and sometimes it turns into some really interesting stuff. And that's sort of the genesis of it. That's where it develops, is that where people get their own ideas. Generally, it's things like they just want to change the colour or personalise it. That's a big thing, because they're bought a lot as gifts. So people want to put initials with a plaque on there, or get a favourite colour, or that sort of thing.
So as far as exhibitions, because I know that you've done exhibitions over the years as well.
Yeah.
I think, would you say that the exhibitions have been probably a good thing for exposure rather than necessarily building the sales business?
Essentially, I think that's what they are better for.
Yeah.
Is to get people to know who you are.
Yes.
Sales is generally not something you do a lot of at exhibitions.
Yeah.
Or at least we haven't.
Yeah.
But we don't really know that the exhibitions didn't lead to sales further down the track, that people got to see us, tell a friend, buy it themselves later. My stuff's usually not bought immediately. It's bought with consideration after it's not an impulse buy. So they generally think about it, consider whether they want something else or whether they want to change it, or for whatever reason, it takes a little while for them to decide, and then they come back later.
Definitely. We've definitely seen that. So one of the first, you were a finalist in Salo in the earlier years in a competition. I think we had an exhibition at the Advertiser.
Yeah, I was in the top 10 of the Contemporary Art Prize with a box then. I also got nominated for, what was it? It was a Jam Factory Craft Award that's part of Sala.
Yes, yeah.
And I also got an honourable mention in the Cheongju International Craft Festival in Korea, South Korea.
And we've done lots of exhibitions, haven't we, with Ernst & Young in the Fringe with Jeff Brumelow, a wood sculptor, and had our own exhibition in Galleria Innocenti called several. We did, actually, the Italian Connection, which was quite fun, with a few other artists as well.
Yep.
And so, I think, would you say that the exhibitions are really important for people to see your work, but they do tend to go back to either an outlet or, for us more predominantly, online to have that conversation and then purchase a box?
That's how the process usually goes with my work. I think we've made a few sales at exhibitions, but generally that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Uncle Fred's got a birthday coming up.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Let's contact David and see if he can do a black one in that box there, and then they buy it from there. But it's generally, that's the process.
So what would be the most interesting sale that you've made?
Well, late last year, just before Christmas, I got an inquiry from... Actually, it wasn't an inquiry. He just bought outright. It was a gentleman in Greenland, a guy called Thor, believe it or not, who bought an orange English elm, was the wood, jewellery box for his wife. And it wasn't so much that the box was interesting or... It was just the location and how it ended up getting there, because I was really worried about this one, because the biggest worry I have is whether stuff is going to arrive when I send it internationally, because we send every week just about something internationally.
Yeah.
And this one just took longer and longer to get there because I track it through Australia Post. And I contacted him and he said, don't worry, it comes from Denmark, because Greenland's owned by Denmark. And it'll probably get here the next Tuesday the helicopter comes, because he told me that stuff only comes by helicopter there every Tuesday. That's how they get anything.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, crikey, this box is going to arrive by helicopter in Greenland. And as long as it got there by Christmas, that was what he wanted, and he bought it pretty early. So I did do that, but it took a lot longer. But just the process of waiting for it, I could just picture it getting put onto a helicopter and flying across, like, Antarctica, landing in, I think, near an air base, the Thule Air Base in Greenland.
Yeah,
that was... I've made some weird boxes, but that was the weirdest... Well, not weirdest, but the most interesting location, I guess you could say, I've sent something.
Yeah. So I suppose now we're actually looking at sort of where the Innocenti boxes are right now, starting off as, you know, the gifts and the metal and the timber, going to markets and galleries and having our own gallery, Gallery Innocenti, through the Renew Adelaide program, which really helped, didn't it, getting to that next step. And really,
I think that's where we went full time with the, and where Etsy, because I had the time while you're sitting in the shop waiting for customers to walk in to think about things, because you're just sitting there. I mean, I did work inside the shop, but the gallery gave me time to develop things like Etsy and the website, which is where, I mean, it's taken 7 years to get there, but now it's the full time business it is.
Yeah.
Because I had the time to consider those things and work on them, ask people about it. I mean, we did some Etsy markets even where people, we talked to them and got to know how to tinker with this, that and the other with Etsy and with the website.
Yes.
So I suppose the next step is more collaborations with actual watchmakers, which we've started to do. Etsy's ticking along nicely. The website is probably still slow, but we've got to... It's getting better and better and better.
Yes.
But the next step is through either Etsy or the website. I think both. We've had watchmakers contact us who want custom work done for their watches.
And even the individuals, it's become the Innocenti box has very much become this watch box maker or customer who has either a small collection of watches or they're watch enthusiasts. I mean, what is the biggest watch box that you've actually made?
I made one for 21 watches for a guy in Singapore.
Yeah.
Stainless steel box.
Yeah.
It was a beast. It was huge.
Yeah.
That's the biggest. I've had requests for more, I think. Some guys, God, people collect watches in huge numbers now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the biggest stretch I could do was the 21.
Yeah.
It was a 7x3, so it was... The boxes become, because they're metal, become quite heavy, but also flexible. So it's tricky to do them any larger than that.
Yeah, yeah. So the individual customers, we still have a lot of those around the world, really, and within Australia as well. And... Even through these times, through COVID-19, is that we're still able to send stuff around the world, and that's because we've really researched different ways to send work, isn't it? Like the freight has become a really important way of tracking and different ways to actually get the work.
Yeah, it is a crucial part of...
Mm.
I think internationally, what's made the business work is having an international presence, because locally, Australia's a small market. So if you can get your stuff sold, well, I think it's a small market for what I do. Might be good enough for other work, I'm not sure, but that's for other people. But internationally, we had to figure out a way to send these boxes securely and safely to places. I've sent stuff to Brazil. I've sent stuff to Romania. One just went to Czech Republic. And all of them have different postage systems, postage services, customs problems. In Germany, I've got to pay a fee for the package recycling.
Yeah.
So I had to navigate through a German recycling website that, you know, I still don't think I understood it, but somehow it worked to send boxes to Germany, to customers in Germany, because Germans, I did one particular custom box for a German guy who wanted an 8-watch box with a compartment for accessories, etc. And then that expanded the German market because, like I said before, the algorithm for Google or Etsy discovered, right, he's sending to Germany, let's push more German customers. So now I've got a lot of traffic from Germany. Then that probably, the algorithm figures, well, if he's selling to Europe, let's send him customers from Finland. So now we're doing the collaboration with a guy called Martin in Helsinki who makes his own watches, and he gets me to custom make single watch boxes for his customers as an add-on to his watches.
So that's interesting, like where the next step for Innocenti Boxes is these collaborations, and Germo in Finland is the one of the collaborations that you're currently working with.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting way to work, and it's very much the way that we're looking at the business moving forward with other businesses, with the Tool Watch in Switzerland, and just starting to work with a dentist, which is an interesting project as well. But the Germo watches is an interesting one. Maybe tell us a little bit more about...
Well, Martin through Germo is J-U-R-M-O. I'm not sure that's the way to pronounce it, but that's what we say.
We should check that.
We should check that so we don't stuff it up. Got through in touch with me through Etsy, and he just got me to custom make a single watch box for a customer because he makes custom watches. And he wanted it as an add-on, something he could offer the customer as an individualization, I guess, of the sale, to they get this special watch box to go with the special watch. So, and that's just sort of carried on from there. We're now working together, and he contacts me when he convinces a customer to do that every so often, to the point where he thinks now he's going to use me for, at least we had a WhatsApp discussion recently to... where I'm going to... He wants to get to the point where that's all he supplies his customers is my boxes. So,
which is a really interesting collaboration of the handmade, the bespoke watchmaker working with you, the handmade, bespoke watch box maker. So it's and you really enjoy that as well.
I do. It's interesting to get... Because Martin's certainly got his own ideas from his customers about what they want. The second one I did for him was one that had an interesting design on the lid. Do you remember that one with the crisscross pattern? And he said it had an emotional connection to the family, and it was like the customer really loved it. So it's interesting doing that sort of work, because you feel like it means something to the customer. It's not just something to store a watch in.
Yeah, and I think your boxes actually, I mean, we could talk for a long time about all the stories that come around the customer that has had an Innocenti box either made for them or they've bought one quite often. I mean, we've even got, you know, friends that have bought one of the boxes for their partner or husband that collects watches. They didn't even know they collected watches. So we're coming to the end of this interview, David. It's been lots of fun. What is the... It's really nice being out in your workshop. Is that... What is the next step as far as the actual product, the development of the boxes?
Well, apart from the collaborations, because that's been a recent thing, I've also developed boxes that have extra features that are sort of... we call them speciale, which in Italian is special, where they've got slightly more luxurious features, you could say, where I colour code the screws to the metal so you can't see them very much. They're a security screw, so they look interesting if you do want to feature the screw.
Yeah.
I've got now leather watch pillows made for it's more of a luxury. I build an internal frame to the box which spaces the watches more to give them more room. I use a really precision made American-made hinge from Horton Brasses as a feature of the box. Like it's a really nice-looking hinge that worked just a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's all fine-tuning. And also, I've got a lot of requests from watch guys who want to keep things like the paperwork they buy with their watches or extra watch straps or, like, watch adjustment tools. I got no idea what they're doing, but that's what they want.
Yeah.
So I make compartments that I now cover up with a feature piece of wood. So when you open the box up, there's this beautiful bit of wood.
Yeah.
That is the cover of this compartment, so it keeps it dust-free. And
yeah.
So that series of boxes, you could call it a series, or is going to be out soon. I've made three of them, and we're almost ready to...
To launch those.
To sort of put them out in the market.
And so that the idea of this Innocenti Speciale box is that you can buy it ready-made with all of the features, or you can actually still design your own bespoke box by the conversations that you have and use any... I mean, that's probably, if you think about where we've come from that very first market, the artist market in 2006... is that conversation that you particularly have with the customer to actually design something that fits their particular purpose. So the bespoke, the Innocenti Speciale box is the same.
It is. And that's just a refinement of what I've been doing for over the years through the website, through Etsy, is just getting an idea of what customers would like. Because they certainly have their own ideas about what they want when they see my work. And I just sort of help guide them as to what's possible. And quite often they're in doubt about whether they get this, that or the other. And I kind of just push them towards one thing or another that actually is a solution to their problem.
Yeah.
So... And they push me too. They'd say, can you do this? And I go, oh, I never thought of that. So, yeah, I'll see what I can figure out. And I'd figure it out. And
yeah.
So the idea of the compartment lid cover came from that customer in Germany. So, you know, that came from him. And I've developed that now. It's changed from the first idea.
Yeah.
So the idea I used to solve his problem, I've now gone and solved it in a better way. So now that's where it comes out in the speciale. I built that frame so the lid sits on that more, and it just looks better and looks more. It looks cleaner and looks, sleeker.
Yeah.
So that's how things come about.
Yeah. David, it's the last question. It's been really fun, hasn't it?
Where's my scones and coffee?
That'll have to be later on this afternoon. So what do you love about being an artist?
I've always liked the idea of creating, being creative, whether that's the music or the boxes. I've liked the idea of making something that's my own idea and controlling my own work. I've always had the idea of the second I worked for someone else, I knew I didn't want to. So, and being an artist means you do work for yourself.
Yeah.
And being a musician, you sort of work for other people, but essentially you're working for yourself. And I've always liked that idea. But the artistic side of it is just the idea of being creative.
Yeah.
It's almost like a meditative thing where you just think about nothing else.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's why I like it.
Thanks, David.
All right.
Thanks for being on my podcast. I better get into the kitchen and make some scones. Thanks.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation I had with David Innocenti, and David is absolutely correct. I do bring him afternoon tea from time to time, and I do love making scones. There was quite a bit that we chatted about, and on reflection, thinking about where our business has come from having the Innocenti boxes as a consignment in galleries around Australia, to now working more in collaboration with other makers in different parts of the world. Renew Adelaide, that has been a really big stepping stone for us and really helped us launch into the online business, and so much more. Well, please tune in next time when I interview another entrepreneurial artist on Tea, the Entrepreneurial Artist Podcast. And before I go, just to acknowledge that the music I use on my podcast is written by and played by David Innocenti, called One Thing Led to Another. Until next time, bye for now.